Hi Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai Fem, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, chinuch, how to make ourselves better people, how to make the world a better place, how to influence our families, our friends, our communities, and just live the way we want to live, where we want to live, and how we want to live. And that is by knowing, by understanding, by learning, by achieving. And that's exactly what we do in the show every week, a different topic with different professionals that we discuss, different areas of life that we need to do and learn about in order to grow, develop, and reach our proper potential. And today we're going to be speaking specifically about reaching our potential, because we are going to the younger age and developmental delays and identifying developmental milestones and what we want to see, where we want to see, up to looking into primary school and identifying the differences between developmental challenges and maybe learning difficulties or learning disabilities. Or I know those of you who listen a lot know I hate calling it learning disabilities, and we spoke in length about it. And regarding, you know, the different options of what we need to do in order to achieve the maximum of our potential. For that, I have in studio here with me two professionals from two different stages, I'd say, in life. On the one hand, we have Ann Griffin, who is a play therapist for the younger age, per se, that where we start. And she works in private practice and in different schools, as well as Tamar Levine, who is the psychologist at Ariel, which is a remedial school. And Tamar is the psychologist of the school, seeing everything that comes through that area of learning disabilities, challenges, and different areas of education and things that we need to know that don't necessarily fall in within the box of the mainstream. So before we jump into this discussion, let's introduce ourselves and get to know each other. Good afternoon, Tamar. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. So my name is Tamar Levine. I have worked with children my whole professional career. I first studied speech and hearing therapy and worked as a speech and language therapist at a school for special needs children.
Oh, wow.
So,
That's an interesting journey from speech and therapy to psychology.
Interesting and connected. I value that experience all the time.
We'll get there.
Okay. And then I went to study further, do my master's in educational psychology. And then after graduating from that, I worked in another private remedial school as an educational psychologist. And also back at the same special needs school, but this time as an educational psychologist. And then I've ended up at King David Ariel, which is a remedial Jewish remedial day school in Johannesburg.
Yeah, which is part of the network of King David that are the sponsors of the show. So we have this great connection very strongly. And I'm going to go to introduce you and to hear a bit about your journey and career. But before that, we do need to take our first ad break. And when we come back, we will go right into our introducing and discussion. Short break. We'll be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and here in a very interesting discussion with psychologist, educational psychologist Tamar Levine, who now I learned that is also with a speech therapy background, as well as Ann Griffin, who is a play therapist, which we are going to introduce right now onto the show. Just a reminder, in the meantime, if there's anything you'd like to ask them about your child, about developmental challenges, about identifying issues, about anything you think a play therapist or an educational psychologist can answer, or you would like to hear more about, or from me even, anything you want, 34519 is the SMS line, 061-895-1019, or you could call, I don't know, should we do call? I guess if it's urgent, 087-055-1818, but generally just 34519 is the SMS line, or 061-895-1019. By the way, if you also want to be on the list of people who get a notification ahead of time who's going to be today on the show every Monday, with a different topic, so you could make sure to pick up the show, just send an SMS now to 34519 or Telegram 061-895-1019. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Rabbi, and to your listeners. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Complete pleasure. So tell us a bit about your work and play therapy, etc., what that is exactly.
Of course. So my name is Anna Griffin, and I'm from Think Me Play Therapy. I'm a registered play therapist, and I also provide filial play coaching.
Video play coaching.
Filial play coaching, which is essentially around empowering the caregiver or the parent in understanding relationships and behavior and kind of deepening their emotional understanding around those areas.
Do you work with both? Meaning, would you work with the parent and the child, or it's either or?
Okay, so in play therapy, the focus is on the child, so they're the client. And in filial play coaching, we're working with the parent and the child, but the parent is the primary client.
Okay, so it would be a contradiction.
A contradiction.
Between working with the child and the parent.
So I wouldn't position it as a contradiction. So if we look at play therapy, your child is meeting with a play therapist once a week for 40 minutes, and the play therapist is the agent of change. They're helping the child understand some of the challenges that they're facing, and they're translating that to the parent. In filial play coaching, we're coaching the parent to be the primary agent of change. So they are learning 4 broad skills to understand what is the behavior trying to communicate.
That's putting a lot of thought into the child's behavior, and you start working from kids at the age of 3.
Correct.
And you say looking to with the child to identify their challenges and their what they're facing. What challenges are we facing at the age of 3?
So that's going to vary case by case and with regards to reason of referral. So it could be maybe there's a trauma-related incident as a reason for referral. Perhaps they are struggling socially or academically. And although they may not have the verbal capabilities to highlight these challenges, we're going to see it in their themes of play or in their behavior, their way of trying to communicate, I'm struggling in an area.
So you find a 3-year-old who's struggling socially, mm-hmm. will be aware of that?
I think children are more aware than what we give them credit for. So if we're looking at, they potentially will begin to realize that I'm getting certain remarks or comments from parents, teachers, caregivers about the way that they are relating to other children or to parents.
At that age already?
Definitely. And tomorrow, Tomorrow, if you agree with that, they start to sense and pick up that there's something that the way that I'm doing is not always being met with kind of positive remarks.
So that's interesting to see, because I want to hear from Tamar, because Tamar, you're at King David's Ariel, which means the kids are generally are coming in are from the age of 6, correct me, maybe a bit younger.
No, 6 and up.
6 and up. And by then, would you say that there's full awareness of the child of their own challenges?
I certainly agree with Anna that I think the feedback that they are getting, even at 3, from the people in their world, whether it's their parents or siblings or other children, might not be sort of positive feedback. If they are, for example, not listening to a parent, they're going to get negative feedback. And certainly in terms of their communication, they might not have the heightened awareness that it's a problem, but you're going to see that frustration. If a 3-year-old is not able to communicate their needs to their parents or teachers, that's going to often result in a lot of frustration for them. And that's how they're going to sort of be showing you that they are aware that there's some difficulty there, even if it's not being able to name that difficulty or identify it as such.
Yep.
So, you know, Tamar, we speak a lot about negative feedback and how we're worried about it and about the child's self-esteem and development and how they will manage and focus in their day-to-day tasks when they are feeling that negative feedback and challenge. And then we come from a generation ago who our grandparents, and I hear this all the time from them, is, well, that's life. there is negative feedback and they must toughen up. And what do you think that I always get negative, positive feedback wherever I go? Where do we keep that balance?
I think that negative feedback also doesn't necessarily have to be sort of corrective feedback or no. I think it's sometimes about not being able to get their needs met. They're not being able to affect a change in their world that they want, whether it's, to get more food, for example, or something that wouldn't be considered unreasonable. They're maybe not able to communicate that. And so by negative feedback there, I mean just that they're not, the response that they're hoping for is not the response that they're getting in that situation. So I don't know if that sort of segues
okay,
a little
so,
bit.
So when we look at that negative feedback, so let's look at the beginning of development of a child. Okay, when do we say, no, this child is not developing naturally and we want to intervene? What are the signs that we're starting to see at the age of 2, 3, when we talk about early intervention and how important that is? We also don't want to do too much early intervention and too much intervention. So what are we looking for? What are we noticing?
So I think now's when we're getting to talking about delays in development. And basically what we're looking for is that relative to their peers, the child is not, their age-related peers, the child is not doing what one would expect a child to do of that age.
So when we're noticing a gap between their abilities to their peers at that age, within reason. When we talk about noticing, and I'm going to leave you with this question, and then we're going to take another ad break, and when we come back, you'll answer it. But regarding this question is, when we talk about, you know, I'm the one who started with it, who said, when we are, what are we looking for? And my question is, should we be looking for, or should we only address when we're talking about a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, when something is crystal clear, shining out, there's a challenge, there's a problem, let's address it? Because maybe if we're going to look for it, we're going to have a bit of an overkill when it comes to allowing children to develop naturally and, you know, giving them their proper space that they need. I do want to hear that answer, and I'm sure we all want to hear that answer, but we're going to have the break first, and then we come back, we will deal with that. And by the way, any questions, any comments, anything you want to add, or even if you just want to know who the guests in the show are going to be, 34519 is the SMS line, or Telegram 061-895-1019.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and I'm here in studio with educational psychologist Tamar Levine, as well as Anna Griffin, who is a play therapist, and we are discussing the developmental challenges that we see with kids, or and any other difficulties, issues that we want to address and identify and see in our day-to-day life. And obviously anything you would like to comment or say, 34519 is SMS line, or Telegram 061-895-1019. And as well as if you want to be on the list of knowing who is going to be on the show ahead of time. So right before the break, I asked, what are we looking for? And then I rephrased, should we be even looking for? Are we not getting into a bit of an overkill when we're looking for seeing what is underdeveloped, what is more challenging for our child? And should we not just wait until it's crystal clear, obvious, and then start addressing? Obviously keeping the balance with early intervention and the importance, etc., but at the same time being aware that we're not looking for problems, or we should look for problems. I don't know. Who's starting? Tamara?
I think that we need to be very aware of when there's a big discrepancy. So I just wanted to go back a little bit, and when we talk about development, we talk about reaching milestones. So for example, a child first will learn to sit and then crawl and then walk, and those happen at expected times, but each milestone happens within a range of development, and I think that's what's important to remember. So for example, walking, I might be a little bit off on the exact months, but let's say it's supposed to be from around 10 months to 18 months, anywhere around there you would expect a child to learn to walk. So if your child is not walking by 18 months, that is possibly when you start to be concerned and maybe have it checked out. So I think what we're saying is, or what I'm saying as well, is that I agree with you not to necessarily look for problems, but when somebody is very different from what might be expected, and we're comparing it to what other children of the same age are doing, that might be when you need to step in and intervene somehow.
Okay, Anna, when we look at the milestones that the kids go through, and we're not going to go through all the milestones and what we need to look for, development, etc., but are we familiar as parents generally with what Tamar spoke about as crawling, sitting, etc., or are we also aware as parents of eye contact, touch, reactions to body language, and should we educate ourselves on that?
I think it's highly important for parents to be aware of those non-verbal developmental milestones. Eye contact, movement, how is my child responding to me, how am I responding to my child is also equally important, because that starts to form the foundation of understanding what my child is trying to communicate to me, and if there are any potential difficulties or challenges that are starting to emerge.
So be aware of the milestones and be able to manage. Okay, so going to the discussion, you know, you spoke a bit about working with the parents as well as your clients, and seeing how to manage, help them identify the challenges and help them identify why a child behaves in a certain way and what they do for their behavior and how to manage their day-to-day life. And I'd like with the two of you to get some kind of understanding of maybe a guideline for parents to ask themselves, what I'm doing now with my child, that I'm telling them to sit this way or do this or do that or go this way, am I disciplining them? Am I educating them? Am I controlling them? Am I managing them? What am I actually doing at this time? And how do I know that I'm educating my child and not disciplining and not just controlling them? Or how do I know for myself as a parent that I'm not overreacting to something and dealing with something with a fair way?
That's a very interesting question to pose. So what you're highlighting there, I think, in my understanding, is how do I know if I'm pushing my child or am I empowering my child? And if we have to look at the difference between controlling and placing them or analyzing them against a certain boundary, we've got to be mindful, am I trying to reach a specific outcome, in which case there's an element of control, or am I providing opportunities for my child to meet these standards through supportive strategies? So you mentioned there discipline, and just before we spoke about negative reinforcement. So if we look at discipline, it's essentially around teaching long-term goals. It's not about consequence. So if we go to control, that's often associated with consequence. It's a way of trying to ensure something happens. I'm controlling it with a negative reaction or negative consequence. With discipline, we're looking at targeting the behavior, and we're saying this behavior may not be appropriate, but these are some of the strategies that we can do. So we're offering long-term learning strategies.
Okay, so I'm going to take the other side of that and go to Tamar. Because Tamar, you work with kids and in your schools, and there's a lot of kids that, besides for learning their academics at your school, they also learn how to self-regulate from a sensory point of view, and they learn how to manage their tone of voice and their language and their everything around them. And sometimes the kids are not regulated, and sometimes kids are a bit beyond the space that they could potentially hold themselves properly in. And then we have parents that, I've heard that parents are also human, so they say, and maybe this child who's having a meltdown, today his mom is in a good mood, and she handles it perfectly, and she goes through the consequences and the reactions and everything she's learned at the course she's done with the school or whatever. And then there's another day that she comes home with a headache after her boss shouted at her, and there's no way. How can the child balance this kind of inconsistency in reaction? And how do we teach a child that, yes, sometimes you'll get a different reaction because be aware of your surroundings. And sometimes your mom has a headache and she won't be as patient as you would want her to. Or we just tell parents, you know what, you're the parent. Take a deep breath and just manage.
one of the other issues that comes up in psychology is the notion of the good enough mother. So I think that's something certainly to reassure parents, and it doesn't actually only have to be the mother, and dads are included as well, is that...
Well, modern world. Okay.
That you don't have to get it right all of the time. So I think that is built in, that children can cope with some level of inconsistency. Obviously, we don't want to aim for an inconsistent style of parenting. We want as much consistency as possible. But kids can actually deal with things being okay most of the time. That is life.
Is that inconsistency? Meaning, if I tell my child, yes, when I'm with a headache, I have less patience, it doesn't mean that what I did is different to what I'm doing. I just can't right now. Is that would you, or at certain ages, that would be different? Or how would you react to that as being consistent?
We all have our good days and bad days. So in that sense, it's no one can be consistently perfect all the time. Another notion is about co-regulation. So you spoke about kids being self-regulated. One of the sort of developmental stages is that first children need to be co-regulated before they can self-regulate. And that is where the role of the parent, and I'm sure Anna can talk more to this as well, that parents model and also help their children to regulate themselves from a sensory point of view, from an emotional point of view, from a behavioral point of view. And that requires a regulated parent, which is difficult to maintain all of the time, that we are very aware of. But that is how children will eventually learn to self-regulate and ultimately get to the point where they're able to speak back to the parent. In the sense of a lot of the children from our school will actually tell their parents, I need to regulate, or possibly point out to the parent, you're not regulated, because they have learned several strategies and they've learned what that really means. Perhaps also it's worth explaining to the audience, regulation, what that really means is just having some level of control over your own behavior.
With basically means balancing out your senses and being able to be balanced with your approach to what you need to deal with. We've spoken quite a bit. I actually recommend many times to parents that have the sensory challenges or whatever to tell their children. And if they're sitting at a family meal or a Shabbos meal or sometime and they feel extremely sensory overload, then instead of the child learning that my dad storms out of the room for 20 minutes when we make noise, that could smile, this could say, I'm having a sensory overload, go out for 5 minutes and come back in 10 minutes, and it's been amazing. So I think being honest and transparent with your children about it is amazing. What triggered me when you spoke about the co-regulation and before the self-regulation is siblings. Let's talk about siblings a bit, because sometimes not only one child is not fully regulated at all times at home. So when it comes to that dynamic of a unregulated sibling, you know, maybe you take it from siblings, and then Tamara, you'll teach us what you can learn from the class, because I'm not sure at class everybody's regulated all the times, and how we can learn from that at home. So Anna, what would you tell parents when it's multiple kids?
Okay, so when it's multiple kids, I completely understand the sense of being overwhelmed when there's more than one child feeling dysregulated, feeling out of control. As parents, what we need to understand is being regulated doesn't necessarily mean calm. And Rabbi, you've pointed out some very important strategies in terms of naming the feeling, naming the experience that you as the parent are going through. With regards to siblings, and you're noticing this increased dysregulated behavior manifesting between them, you as a parent are acting as the external regulator. You're translating to your children what is happening in the moment. How do you do that? You start off by naming the experience that's happening for you. I'm noticing that's what's happening in right now between you and your sister, you and your brother, is I'm feeling like my body's got too much happening. So we're starting to externalize and bring that awareness. That's the first step in terms of co-regulation and with siblings. The second element after naming that emotional experience is to start providing alternative strategies.
Okay. But before we go to the alternative strategies, what do we do at school in that situation, and what can we learn from that at home?
In terms of self-regulation?
Yeah, first, when in a place that we don't have the regulation from our surroundings or the core regulation, or we're stressed, or, classmates, etc.
A big part of self-regulation is that building in that awareness of what is building up within you. So I think that is always a strategy, is to try and get in there before the temper tantrum, before everything gets completely crazy, which is easier said than done sometimes. But within a school environment, one of our strategies that we use, which is a lovely strategy to use at home, is simply the idea of a robot, of stop, think, go. Just trying to bring in some pause to whatever the reaction is. We often say to adults and to children, you would rather respond to something than react. And that is done by getting people, whether it's children or adults, to slow down, think about what they're doing before they act on the impulse, really. And there are many sensory strategies in terms of, like you mentioned, the father saying, this is too much for me now, I need to leave the room and go to a quieter space. Within the classroom environment, there are a lot of schools are more aware, there are sometimes opportunities for that. There's opportunities to go out in the playground. There's many teachers are aware if they can see a child getting very irritable, they can see that build up. That's the child you possibly send on the errand. Whether you have to make that errand up, you don't really need something, you send that child because you can see they possibly need that movement break to help them regulate and be ready to learn.
Be creative. Is what you're saying, which I could say that by the space by us, instead of stop thinking, we do stop identify. And then, because I think beyond the thinking is also, kind of seeing your surroundings and what is the reality of what's happening around me. I want to continue in this, but I need to get to another topic, which I think is extremely important. Anna, you're a play therapist that works with early intervention and with younger kids. Tamar, you're an educational psychologist at a school, and you meet the kids when they're already beyond their assessment and therapy in the beginning, because they're already coming with some kind of educational assessment to the school. How do you two, and I'd love to hear from both of you, complement each other? What are your two roles together? Do you just start and then transfer? Do you continue the journey together? And obviously not you, because you don't know each other, you never met each other before the show, but generally, what is these two roles and how do they work together?
Okay, well, if I look at it in terms of an ethical standpoint, we wouldn't be working with the same child at the same time, because we could be looking at different modalities of helping the child. How we could work in terms of long-term support is perhaps it starts off with the educational psychologist in terms of identifying primary indicators, and then later on realizing that perhaps this child is going to do better in terms of addressing these challenges within a play therapy setting through the medium of play.
So when would you refer to play therapy?
Generally an emotional concern that requires a more sort of long-term approach. School-based therapy is much more intermittent. When there's Purim, etc., we don't necessarily get to have our session. So that would be another time when I would refer out, is when I felt that a child needed that more consistent approach. And also when the concerns are possibly more to do with the family, less to do with the school sort of based day, that would be another time that would be important to refer out to a play therapist.
So basically the consistency and the bigger picture and the support that you can get from each other and to understand. Well, we do need to take another break, and when we come back we'll have to dive in a bit more to these topics. A short break and we will be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and we're in the middle of a very fascinating discussion. Just to remind us all, I'm here with educational psychologist Tamar Naveen, as well as Anne Griffin, who is a play therapist. And just to understand a bit more, and then we're going to go more into the discussion. Anna, what is play therapy exactly?
Okay, so play therapy is an alternative to talk therapy in that we utilize play and the world of metaphor to help children and adolescents process any of the challenges or concerns that they may be facing. Now, as play therapists, we're trained to identify these emotional challenges within the play and to help the child or adolescent to become aware of these challenges so that they can integrate it within a conscious realm. They are becoming aware of it. What's so beautiful about play is that it offers a sense of safety. It's not directive, and it's often child-led.
Okay. Can you give me the difference between the floor time of the DIR, for instance, and the classical play therapy, which is they're both kind of enabling, but it sounds like the maybe floor time is a bit more enabling?
Floor time? Can you just tell me a bit more about that?
Basically, the developmental program of the imaginational world of bringing out the emotions of the children and working with them, and keeping that balance of the allowing the child experience different characters through what their play and through their games or imagination or drawing or whatever it is, and be able to learn from those characters onto their behavior.
Okay, so within play therapy, as play therapists, a lot of our strategies is around reflection. And that can be within the mirroring of body movements, and it can be reflections in terms of giving a narrative to what we're seeing in the play. So that's where it differs from your regular play, where the child is exploring freely. In play therapy, there's a reflective element coming through. So we're helping bring aware what's coming through in your play, what's making you feel overwhelmed, or what are you struggling with, through our mirroring and reflective statements.
Okay. So going from there and hearing what you do as an individual therapist and working with a child, Tamar, you're part of a team. How does a team work?
So I'm very blessed to be part of a wonderful team at King David Ariel, which comprises of speech therapists, occupational therapists. We have a physio that comes in once a week, and a remedial therapist as well as all of our teachers who are specially trained. And our therapy by nature, I think being at a school, often is much more directive, in that there is a little bit more teaching involved. From my therapeutic point of view, it would be teaching regulation strategies, directly teaching a child different breathing techniques that they could use when they need to either calm themselves down or get themselves into a space where they are ready to learn. And we work together very closely. So when kids have difficulties, it's very seldom that a child has a difficulty just in one area. And when we are seeing them in the school environment, we are all able to work together on the different areas of development that might need assistance.
So it's fascinating, because it sounds like Anna's work, in a way, is the work itself is much more holistic, but then you as a team are by default much more holistic, but you're coming directive. So you have many, many different parts of directive, while this Anna's having a one-man show of holistic, and that it's a very interesting balance to see how that comes into play. I'm going to do something that I don't do a lot, and not all messages that come at a later point that I go through, but there's one message that came in that I think is a very important question, so I'm going to drop my question and go to the message that came in, and love to hear both of your thoughts about it. Hi, thank you, Abhijit. This is so helpful. If I see my child still has time according to the chart for certain development, but I don't think he's even close, should I intervene or wait for full diagnostic time allocated to pass? Meaning, basically, according to the charts, my child's fine. My mom instinct is telling me he's not or she's not. What do I do?
Well, that's a very conflicting space to be in, because you've got, on the one side, you've got this academic research that's saying this is still normal, but from a mom's side, you're sensing that, no, something else is coming through. In that instance, I would always seek additional support. Rather be safe than sorry, essentially.
Okay. And vice versa?
And vice
versa. If according to the charts, the child is not really developmenting, but the parent strongly feels that they're okay, they'll be there, it's fine.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing also for the parent to reflect on, is there any external reasons coming in and into why I feel my child isn't meeting those developmental milestones? What is there anything that's coming through in terms of, am I expecting more from my child? And reflecting on those elements too.
Okay, Tamara, your thoughts?
I second the mom trusting her gut instinct.
In both cases?
No, not in both cases. I feel in the first instance that often a mom might be seeing friends' children or possibly some the preschool or play school teacher has said something, or it's just her observation. I would rather seek that intervention sooner than later. And my reason for this, for not agreeing with the that maternal feeling in the second case, is that it can be very painful sometimes to acknowledge or admit sometimes when our child is having difficulty. And I do feel sometimes that it could be missed that your child needs the intervention because of, and it's very natural, but because of your not wanting to accept that, hey, my child might be having some difficulty.
Okay, that's a very difficult one, because I hear what you're saying and I agree. And that's why I think a parent needs to go to a very deep journey within themselves to figure out why they're feeling different to the charts and everything. But if they've gone through it and they consulted and spoken to people and they feel like, no, it's not because of the pain, it's not because of the external reasons, it's literally their deep instinct as a parent. There's, with all the professional work I've been trained in doing and think, there's something inside me that always says, listen to yourself. And if you as a parent feel strongly and you've eliminated external things, exactly like you said, I agree with you, Tamara, but you've eliminated everything, then trust yourself. You are the parent. Not an extreme, not 10 years down the line, but within norm, yes, I do think that strongly, but I guess different opinions. And another break, our last break for the show, so that's good. And then we will be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Rabbi G. We are back and we're really heading towards the end of the show. So much more we can, need, and should talk about, but that's not going to happen on this show today. Maybe at another round. And really, we're left with our generally last question that I always ask, almost always, we'll ask the guest on the show. And that is to Tamar Levine, educational psychologist at King David Ariel, and Anna Griffin, who is a play therapist in private practice, as well as different schools in the Four Ways area, you said, right? And my question to you is, being, yes, you're working with the young generation and you're preparing the next adults and you're working, putting unbelievable effort and work into the future, what do you, on a personal level, hope and wish that parents knew, that children knew, and that will help them in the future if we achieve that goal or that thing? Just anything from your, not as a professional, as a personal person, what would you want to see in our society? Anna.
Okay. I think for me personally, the first thing that comes to mind is to spend more time celebrating and delighting in the nature of who you are and who your child is. Everything, like if we look at learning and we look at just development in general, the importance of a safe and comforting relationship provides a huge effects in terms of areas, different areas in our life. If I come back to it again, it's just delight in your child and spend less time trying to view behavior as something that's potentially negative, and more around communication. spend time learning to understand each other, spend time more, as I said, delighting.
Connect and celebrate life.
Yeah.
And enjoy. Tamar?
I need to add to that or elaborate on that. It's a very similar idea that I would be looking for. And I think it's to do with empathy and compassion. Just general kindness that's part of trying to understand each other, understand the other members of your family, and looking to their potential, whether or not your child has a learning difficulty, needs remedial school, has developmental delays, to see beyond that and to see the potential within that child. And within the family to grow. When there are current problems in a family, there's always potential for change. And I think that potential is what I would emphasize.
It's not problems, it's challenges. And we can overcome them and get them and win and celebrate that love and connection and realize and see beyond, as I hear you saying, which agreed 100%, fascinating, important. And, you know, especially when we have sometimes the difficulties of dealing with developmental delays or learning challenges or whatever it is that we need to address, always to remember that there's life beyond and we need to achieve all of the above. Thank you, Tamar, for being here today. Thank you, Anna, for being here today. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you, Craig, for managing this show perfectly. And you see, I'm finishing you now. You don't even have to scream at me today. And thank you to Senna for putting this interview together. And most important, thank you to our listeners. Thank you for being with us every week. If you did miss part of the show, or the show's very important, but you could just go on the Chai FM app and hear the podcast. Should be up shortly. In the meantime, let's continue our journey of growth, learning, achieving, and we will be back next Monday, 2 to 3, which will be right after we celebrated Purim, which we will probably touch on a bit. Have a great week, safe week, enjoy your holiday, and use it, especially, you know, I didn't get to speak about Purim this week, but use the time to connect, and Purim is the symbol of the relationship that we have with Hashem, and the relationship of just love and care, and I think it's exactly what we were speaking about today between parents and children, and is the same we should have between Hashem and us as adults. So utilize the week, stay safe, and we will be back next Monday, 2 to 3, as we do every week with new topics.